Welcome everyone to today's Open Systems Media eCast entitled Multicore Meets Advanced TCA, Maximizing Your Return. I'm Joe Pavlov from Open Systems Media and PicMig, and I'll be your moderator today. We've got five presenters talking about multicore, some of the opportunities and challenges associated with multicore. We've got a long session today. We've got about 60 slides, so we're going to be presenting for an hour, and then we'll have a 10 to 15 minute Q&A session at the end that we hope you can stay for. A little bit of housekeeping. We encourage questions. If you want to post a question, there's a little button on the lower left side of your screen that you can post a question, and please feel free to do so. So before I introduce the speakers today, I think that we realize that CPU manufacturers are moving away from improving performance by just increasing raw clock speed because of the thermal problems associated with that, and are moving the architectures of advanced chips more to multi-cores. And multi-cores have some real opportunities, but they present some challenges as well. So we've got a very qualified set of speakers today talking about this. To open this thing up, Kat Pate from the ATCA Summit will just briefly go over what's going to happen at the summit later in October. Then Jason Byrne from Continuous Computing is going to talk. Then Phil Morris from Mercury Computer. Then Mark Hemmeling from Wind River, who will talk about some of the software and OS aspects of multicore. And last but certainly not least, my colleague Jeff Martin from GE Fanuc. And then we'll do the Q&A session around the top of the hour. So a lot of good information here. I hope you enjoy it. And with that, I'll hand it over to you, Kat.
Thanks, Joe. Hi, I'm Kat Pate. I'm VP of Sales for Conference Concepts. We host Advanced and Micro TCA Summits. I'd like to thank everyone for participating on the webcast, and I'd also like to invite you to this year's summit being held in Santa Clara at the Convention Center October 27th through the 29th. We have a host of industry experts covering multi-core as well. And if you'd like to exhibit, there's still opportunities there. All the people that will be speaking on today's event are also going to be attending and is speaking at the summit. So please feel free to register online at advancedtcasummit.com. And we have a great program put together this year that's focused not only on the networking and telecom industries, but also directed more towards the defense industry. That seems to be where everyone is looking to gain some business, so we are focused there. We also have a very good report card that will help everyone be able to gauge where we are in the industry and where the platforms are going into what market space areas, so everyone can project for the future. And lastly, we also have a whole group of tutorials that are focused on training. We know everybody's budgets have been cut severely when it comes to marketing and training. And so we hope to facilitate that and get you guys some training. And we look forward to having everyone at the event. And with that, I'll turn it over to Joe.
Okay, thanks, Kat. And yes, we hope we see you at the summit. It's always a good event. Our next speaker is Jason Byrne from Continuous Computing, and I'll just go ahead and introduce Jason and let him get started. Jason?
Hi, this is Jason Byrne. I'm the product manager for the switching and compute product lines. So thank you, Joe. Appreciate the handoff. Some of the things I'd like to cover today, starting off with some of the market drivers for multicore. And I think one of the key themes you'll notice here on my slides, I'm a little excessive on some pictures. I think a picture paints a thousand words. So starting off, looking at the top right-hand side of the slide, you'll see that voice revenues are truly saturated. And the growth areas really is in mobile broadband. And I've highlighted that in the diagram. Another example, a key example, in 2007 alone, the mobile broadband traffic grew 400%. But you can see the infrastructure capacity is only growing at 20% per year. So you can see there's a huge divergence of in path, you know, the revenues are staying pretty stagnant, but the traffic growth is growing exponentially. And that's a key factor when designing some of the infrastructure around some of the wireless traffic. It's forecasted that people will actually consume an exabyte. Now, I know why you had to, when I read the analyst report, I had to go look up what an exabyte was, but that's a million terabytes of traffic, and that's going to be consumed mobile networks this year alone. I know that Verizon reported more than 3,500 terabytes of traffic a month in 2008, and they're expecting that to grow to about 4 million terabytes by the end of 2014. So that's over a tenfold increase in traffic on Verizon's network. More at the subscriber level, T-Mobile has a good benchmark where they've indicated that the average mobile data consumption among its customers have shot up to 3.7 megabytes per user per month, and that's up from just a few kilobytes a couple of years ago. So you can see the key theme here is that the incredible growth in traffic will have to be managed by the carriers if they really want to maintain their and grow their profit line. So moving to the next slide, I wanted to dive a little deeper on exactly what mobile broadband traffic mix really is comprised of. In looking at the diagram on the left-hand side, you can see point-to-point traffic, surprisingly, is only expected to be a small percentage of the traffic, but that the majority of the traffic actually will consist of video, highlighted in green. You can see that's the majority of pretty much going forward. And taking a larger chunk of the share. And really sites like social networking sites like YouTube are driving this video trend with user-generated content and general broadcast sites. So, I mean, looking at this, you'll see it's really going to get worse before it gets better. The sheer amount of traffic people will consume worldwide will put pressure on operator revenues, network capacity, really necessitating radical efficiency drive. And with LTE, the next generation wireless, providing the fastest pipe, a technique called deep packet inspection, really using the multi-core technology, is fast being adopted to provide the traffic in a smart and efficient way. And that's where I highlight in the bottom right, you'll see the smartest pipe for DPI. So LTE truly is enabling the much faster broadband rates to the wireless, but DPI is really doing it in an efficient manner. Moving to the next slide, so really, I've mentioned DPI. What is it? Well, DPI, if you look at the diagram above, you can see that the operator is providing the bit pipe and receiving some revenue for it. But if traffic is increasing beyond capacity every step, then the new methods of monetizing traffic are needed. And this is where DPI really enters the fray. So DPI can be broken into two distinct functions, the first being the enabler of new revenue streams, things like tiered SLAs, targeted advertising, and second is greatly improved network efficiency. And as you can see in the diagram above, some examples of this are traffic shaping, intrusion protection and detection, essentially a lot of security features. And really carrier demand for new revenue really drives the investment into large-scale DPI. Moving on to the next slide, now that I've demonstrated the need for DPI, what I want to do is highlight some of the deployment strategies and challenges, especially around using multi-core. The first introduction of DPI was around lower capacity systems. These were primarily custom appliances, either x86-based or with packet processor, and this typically yielded medium throughput of up to about 10 gig. Other typically lower capacity deployments were on rack mount servers that were typically x86-based. Well, with the next generation of packet processing, the evolution is certainly geared towards DPI-bladed solutions. The introduction of the first packet processing blade capable of 10 gigabits per second came around the 2007 timeframe. These blades were all built with multi-core, multi-threaded processors, which include autonomous security engines to offload the task of encrypting, decrypting user traffic. And another key feature of these blades was that they include specialized hardware like TCAM memories for accelerating common packet processing tasks. And it's at this point that ATCA really starts to shine. With the packet processors reaching 40 gigabits per second coming to market very soon, you'll find that a shelf full of these blades really puts the capacity of the system into the hundreds of gigabits per second, really finally addressing those needs that we discussed in the prior slide. Moving on to the next slide, I want to really I think we've talked enough about the market drivers, now starting to get into some more detail on what's behind us, under the hood, so to speak. This slide really shows how traditionally the technology fell into two camps. There was the low performance, easy to program, general purpose CPUs, typically x86 based with some accelerators. And then there was the other camp, which were the high performance, but specialized fixed function devices or network processors. A good example would be the IXP, that really weren't that easy to program. With the market drivers being the way they are, with the capacity requirements increasing exponentially, this really opened up a market for a third technology, the packet processing. Very high performance with the added advantage of easy to program. And companies like RMI and Cavium really targeting this space. Moving on to the next slide. So now we've talked about the market, the processors themselves. What about the actual system? What does the solution or system look like? Or more specifically, what are the components that really make up a DPI system? Well, for tasks with complex flow analysis, x86 multi-threaded, multi-core, multi-threaded blades are a perfect fit. In the marketplace today, the highest performing dual Intel Nehalem quad-core CPU blades with large amounts of storage, upwards of a terabyte directly mounted onto a blade, and support for faster CPU SKUs. So there's, if you look at Intel's list for Nehalem, there's almost, I think, 12 to 15 different types of Nehalem. And you'll find that some of the products in the market today are really starting to take care or go after some of that high-end processing. The second task is really line rate packet processing, usually found in the multi-core, multi-threaded MIPS processors, RMI being a good example. And these products come in varying numbers of blades, basically packaged into a footprint that meets the operator's needs using large capacity, low latency switches, I beg your pardon. So for example, a medium capacity system would consist of 6U chassis, as shown on the bottom on the middle, consisting of 2 switches for redundancy, 2 x86 compute blades for control plane, but also for that complex flow analysis, and 2 packet processing blades for line rate processing. And this system ultimately supports 80 gigabits per second of redundant uplink capacity. And that's really a medium-sized capacity system in ATCA. And you can see that clearly is leaps and bounds beyond any of the compliance that are found in the marketplace today, as well as any of the rack mount servers that you'll find. Moving on to the next slide, a little more detail. In the last slide, I really talked about two very different and distinct multi-core technologies, right? The x86-based processors and the packet processors. But really, they are complementary functions. Now, I know that might sound odd, but the market perception certainly varies greatly. The x86 vendors state Intel's never-ending die shrink, faster processors, and increasing core strategy, which come out more frequently, almost on a yearly basis. Versus the packet processor folks claiming much higher packet rates with more functionality loaded into the chip, such as security or crypto engines, but less frequently. And I think they come out roughly at approximately every 2-year cycle. So what Continuous has found is that we have found that the use of both types of multi-core, so both the x86 and the packet processors, but in ways that optimize the performance for the function. And that's the key. For that particular function, it depends on the application itself, is the most optimal and highest performance from a system perspective. This means really that a system can be designed in such a way for only a few x86 blades and heavily loaded with packet processing blades, or even vice versa. But it's the mix of these technologies that truly yields the best and highest performing DPI system. Moving to the next slide. What I've done here is I wanted to highlight some benchmarks that are available. Here are some of the targeted applications that really make use of this multi-core technology, some of the distinct features with the actual throughputs on the slide. These are initial benchmarks that highlight really the complementary functions. You can see they're different. They're not targeting the same applications because you won't get the same benchmarks, but certainly for things like video streaming, on an x86 blade, we found we get over 1,500 streams of high-def video streaming through our Continuous Computing's XE60 product. And then on the packet processing side, using the RMI, two RMI chips on our PP50, we found that we get a 20 gigs worth of traffic, a full layer 7 load balancing. You can see, you know, distinct complementary functions with some benchmarks. And clearly these are initial benchmarks, and it will depend on your application and how you tune. We're finding we're getting better performance than this currently today. These are a little old on the benchmarks, but we'll be updating these later on. So moving into the latter part of the slide deck here, I'd like to move on to the next slide, which is covering this x86 multi-core architecture. What we continuous computing has released the XE60 dual Mehalem blade. This board really scales from a single Mehalem to a dual Mehalem architecture, a simple stuffing option. But that's not really the key takeaway here. As you know, PICMIC has announced a new initiative to expand the capabilities of ATCA, really to address additional markets. So the key thing to note is that continuous computing has listened to its customers, sees the capacity bottleneck, and is now breaking the ATCA 200 watt per slot mold, and now supports the higher power Nehalem CPUs with faster clock rates, more power, etc. Really going, supporting the Nehalems that you will find in the rack mounts and at the IBM Blade Centers, that sort of thing. Another key feature that this x86 multicore product has is that now that Intel has embedded the memory controller in the Nehalem itself inside the CPU, so the XE60 has put the largest capacity memory on the board. We've got 8 DIMM sockets on there with 64 gig of memory. And the last thing to highlight on around this multi-core architecture is the storage capacity. More importantly, the method of connection to key is really key to how you connect that storage. What we have found is clearly things like iSCSI, where the storage is mounted in a separate board, really falls foul of the iSCSI bottleneck. The optimal approach is to directly attach or mount the storage directly to the board itself or the RTM. And with continuous computing solution, we now currently support over a terabyte of storage directly connected to the board. And, you know, what are the typical applications? Certainly things like video processing or video streaming really make use of that. Like I mentioned before, 1,500 high-def channels on a single CPU blade. And then moving to the last slide, what I'd like to cover then is on the forwarding on to the packet processing. Continuous computing has a packet processing blade in the marketplace for several years now. Really targeting the 3G and LTE evolved packet core, fixed broadband networks. Really provides DPI capabilities with content-aware packet processing and security functions. It provides really superior performance by two discrete multi-core RMI, the XLR processors. As you know, each XLR has 8 multi-threaded cores with 4 threads per core, so ultimately 32 threads, with a built-in coprocessor. And this PP50 supports each processor with up to 8 gig of memory, as well as a TCAM, this content-based aware, content-based processor via mezzanine. It's especially important, TCAMs are really important for things like high-performance IPv6 routing. And the last thing I think I want to highlight here is that the PP50 interconnects the processors, I/O and backplane fabrics using non-blocking. Right, that's the key, non-blocking 10 gigabits onboard switch. And what we've done here is we've added 2 10 gigabit Ethernet ports onto the front panel as well as the rear panel for some of those low-profile appliance-type applications or, you know, the standard ATCA backplane going to the switch itself. And with that, I think I'd like to I'd wrap up. I've covered a lot of the market drivers, some of the technology behind it, and typically the deployed systems that you'll find in the marketplace. With that, I think I'll hand back to Joe Pavlik.
Okay, thanks, Jason. Just to let everyone know, we are going through an awful lot of material here very fast, and at the end of this presentation, the end of this eCast, will tell you where it's going to be archived, so you can go look at some of this at your leisure. Our next speaker is Phil Morris, who's the technical director of the CTO office of Mercury Computer Systems, and Phil's going to tell us about Mercury's take on multi-core and what opportunities it presents. Phil?
Thanks, Joe. As you said, my name is Phil Morris, and I work in the CTO's office of Mercury Computer Systems. My presentation is a little bit more technology-focused, particularly looking at the software aspects of multi-core, the use of multi-core processors, and in particular, one algorithm library implementation we have. So a little bit about Mercury Computer Systems, the company. We've been providing high-performance embedded computer systems to a variety of industries, particularly defense and commercial industries, since 1981, and we're based in Boston, Massachusetts. In particular, we focus on providing systems that solve typically computationally tough problems and demanding hard real-time problems. And in that space, we've implemented ATCA systems to address industrial control and wireless infrastructure and base station equipment. We have a number of ATCA AMC modules, blades, and indeed package systems to deal with a broad range of processing targets, and in particular, the systems are provide very high performance rapid I/O networking. As you're probably aware, we have sort of found a member of the rapid I/O standard and have very complete implementations both in hardware and software in our systems to enable the multi-core blades to really push the data between each other and around the system at high rates. Obviously, the systems also include all the features of the ATCA standard, including the advanced system management. And typically, our software environment is based on the Linux operating system, but obviously we do support VxWorks and others as well. So let's move on into the meat of the presentation. Really, what's happening, as Joe mentioned at the beginning, Moore's Law is really becoming now Core's Law, and the silicon manufacturers are using replication of processor cores to scale the performance of their chips rather than clock speed these days. And also they are adding, invariably adding, special purpose hardware to accelerate things like deep packet inspection, as we've heard. So in the general purpose processor arena, we've got dual and quad core chips on the market. The multi-core nomenclature is used generally to talk up to chips up to 8 cores, which are soon to be on the market. And beyond that, there are many core processors, one example being the Larrabee chip, which we've heard lots about from Intel, with many tens of cores inside. As well as the general purpose processors, we're seeing accelerator chips. Traditionally, you know, FPGAs have been used in this role, but more recently we've had the IBM Cell and also the GPU companies, in particular ATI and NVIDIA, are pushing their multi-core chips into the computer arena, and some of those chips already have hundreds of cores to use. So, you know, all the hardware is great, but what are we going to do with it? Where Mercury think we're heading is really to a place where a processing element in the system, or on the network, if you like, will typically consist of two pieces. Not all of them are that, but, you know, the general case. So where we have on the left a general purpose many-core chip, you know, here the diagram shows, you know, perhaps an x86. But coupled with that, there is really a large sea of cores implemented in a GPU or an FPGA to provide specific application acceleration type workload, you know, offloading. So, those two elements are connected at high bandwidth through through bridges of some sort into a network. So what we see is that we imagine the on the left on the general purpose calls, because there are so many, you are converging several different software applications into one processor, and that's what the different colours mean or are meant to indicate, with perhaps the accelerator being tied to a particularly intensive sensor processing application, or fat pipe processing application coupled with the GPU or FPGA accelerator calls. So these are the sort of compute node we're heading towards in our systems. And really, that's a little bit in the future, but not too far away, scarily close, in fact. So how do we plan for systems being built of those types of things? And certainly at Mercury, we have a number of reference models that we use, which really we're using to map out our strategy for the software that runs on those new processing nodes. And the familiar terms, scale in, scale out, and scale up. And with the many core and accelerator processing node, we're really focusing on the scale in and the scale out pieces. But in particular, the multi-core software sits in the scale in box. So if we look at scale in to some extent here, how do we implement software that scales in and makes use of that sea of cores? And there's a couple of things. What we're looking at is obviously running on the multi-core processor, we need some sort of operating system that is somehow multi-core aware. That technology pretty much exists in the industry, and typically it's a multi-threaded paradigm where you can spawn multiple threads and they run asynchronously on the processing cores available on the processor. What we have on top of that is something we call a virtualization layer, which we are, in our technology department, we're working to on new technologies to really understand how the multi-core processor should be virtualized to allow those many different applications to execute on the same processor chip. Things like, obviously, like quality of service and determinism are very, very relevant where you're merging applications together. So that's there's definitely a need for comprehensive support for virtualization of the core to host the multiple applications. And I'm sure Wind River are going to elaborate on that in the next talk. Also, then there's the need for any processing functionality that you're going to do, any data processing, to be able to make use of the cores. In this case, we've developed a library called the Multicore SAL library, which allows you to transparently scale your data processing functionality across an arbitrary number of cores. And that's the subject of the next few slides. So what is the multi-core algorithm library? Mercury have had since forever a scientific algorithm library, which is really a fairly large floating point DSP library. And the MCSAL is a new version of that library that is enhanced to work over multiple cores. The library supports mixing of multi-core execution and non-multi-core execution, in the same software, so you can really, you've got a lot of control about how you deploy that across the multi-core processor. It was prototyped, if you like, on the Cell Broadband Engine, which is a heterogeneous multiprocessor, as it says, with a mixture of general purpose and special purpose cores, and is currently being delivered on the dual core PowerPC 8641B, obviously available, you know, in the ATCA form factor. We're currently developing, you know, a new version of the library to support the x86 architecture, you know, in particular the Nehalem class chips, and also the ability to target accelerators built from GPUs. So what does it look like? Traditionally, one would use the math library in the model in the middle of the picture here, where you just have a single threaded or a single thread of application is calling the mathematical functions as it executes. The multi-core version of the library allows you to mix and match the models to the left and right, where you can have on the left, for example, on the dual core processor here, two threads, one on each core, running individual library functions. Or to the picture on the right, you can use a single thread, but actually have your algorithm library calls execute in parallel on, you know, an arbitrary number of calls available on your processing engine. In this way, it's a very lightweight, from the user's perspective, implementation. He doesn't have to change his software very much at all. Really, it's a setup and a shutdown addition to existing sequential code that allows the algorithm library to make use of the additional cores on the chip. Under the hood, if you like, the library has, I guess, in the parlance, been threaded, but essentially there is a manager and worker model implemented within each routine that allows the work that you ask the function to do. Example is if you're doing a long sequence of additions, for example, the threaded version of the library would split that invocation into several blocks of work, with each worker working on that, and then it would merge the results together at the end and give you, you know, the respective speed up when it completed, as compared to a sequential invocation. An interesting side effect of using multiple cores is that often you get superlinear speed up, i.e. two cores gives you more than two times speed up because of the effect of the processor caches that are in. So if you somewhat tune your application, you can really realize a very large performance gain with very little effort from the use of the library. Where are we headed in the future? As I said, we're working today on support for the many-core or multi-core x86 to many-core x86 devices, and also the introduction of, if you like, transparent execution on GPUs for the mathematical library. And we're also considering how, you know, if we should expose some of the inner workings in a development kit. Okay. So the multi-core SAL library, as I said, is one piece of our technology that we're deploying and developing at the moment, but it's really part of an overall suite of software that, you know, includes multi-core support that you can use to develop very high-performance embedded applications across our different product lines, obviously including the micro TCA and ATCA form factors of system. So there's an awful lot to it. I've just really touched briefly on one aspect of our offering today. but I hope it's whetted your appetite. And obviously, we have a comprehensive website here, which you can use to browse both the hardware and other aspects of our software products. So with that, I thank you for your attention. I hope it was audible and good for you, and I'll hand it back to Joe.
Okay, thanks, Phil. Continuing the theme of what about the software, Mark Hermeling from Wind River is going to talk about leveraging multi-core and virtualization. Mark?
Thank you very much, Joe. So let me continue on Phil's slide here, talking more on how do we take care of multi-core, how do we take care of our software running on top of these multi-core devices. So what I want to talk a little bit about is, of course, you're building systems. You're trying to get these systems out fast, cheap, with as few resources as you can, and, of course, with a cost that is as low as you can. But while you're doing that, you're trying to meet your market demands. You're trying to put more functionality in them. You're trying to put them in smaller packaging, higher reliability. And there's two massive pressures pushing towards you, one from the business constraints, one from the market demands. And usually you can only satisfy one of them. You have to kind of play a game of give and take between those two different demands. What I'm going to talk a little bit about here is how you can use multi-core and virtualization to actually play that game. How can you use multi-core and virtualization to try and meet as many of those demands as you can? And it's interesting to note that when Wind River talks about multi-core, virtualization is usually very close by as well. So let's talk about multi-core. What does it mean to go towards multi-core? Well, as you probably are aware, multi-core puts two or more independent processing cores into a single package. Which is interesting. If you take a chip, a single-core chip, and you bolt two of them together, what you'll see is you'll actually get more performance for lower power usage, which is clearly very interesting in the typical scenarios that you use ATCA-based systems for. So I won't spend a lot of time on this. However, what's interesting to note is the role of virtualization in that multi-core world. Because one of the things that we can actually do is that we can take these multi-core processors and we can put what we call a virtualization layer directly on top of that bare metal hardware. And inside of that virtualization layer, called the virtual machine monitor or hypervisor, you can actually run multiple different virtual environments, virtual machines. And inside of these virtual machines, you can run operating systems and applications. And these virtual machines are their own completely separated, isolated environments. So I can actually run, let's say, multiple different instances of Linux or for, let's say, control or networking applications. Or I can take a virtual machine and actually run VxWorks as a real-time operating system on top of that. And the power of that virtualization is that the actual performance cost of that is very low. It's even very difficult to measure. So if you take virtualization and multi-core together, what we can actually do is we can establish one of the primary multi-core software configurations. So at the upper left-hand side of this slide, you'll see a traditional configuration. You see a processor. On top of that processor, you have an operating system. And on top of that operating system, you run your applications. That's the old world. And people have been slowly going to multi-core. Most of the networking applications nowadays either have at least multiple different processors or multiple or a true low core count multi-core, let's say a multi-core chip with, say, two cores. And what people have been using for that is called SMP, symmetric multiprocessing, where they take a single operating system and give both of the two cores to that operating system, and the operating system load balances the application across those two cores. Very interesting solution, very easy to establish. However, there's a problem with this in that it doesn't really scale if you go up to the higher core count, if you go up to 4, 8, 16, and higher core count processors. You'll notice that the SMP, the symmetric multiprocessing, starts losing its efficiency. So one of the things that we can do to that is called asymmetric multiprocessing, meaning run multiple different operating systems on top of these multiple cores. And that is very easy to do in a dual-core world, right? If you take a dual-core processor, you run two Linuxes on that, or Linux and the VxWorks. That's easy, fairly easy to establish. But if you go to the newer Nehalem class processors, or you go to a Freescale P4080, for example, now you have 8 cores. How do I configure multiple different operating systems over those 8 cores, and what can I establish? This is exactly where virtualization can help. Virtualization is the layer that helps you partition your logical operating system layer towards your multi-core hardware layer. And that's what you can see in the two right-hand slides. So I can actually put a virtualization layer called the supervisor. It's a very thin layer. And all the layer does is it sets up the hardware, it boots operating systems on top of the different cores, and then gets out of the way. And it separates the hardware through the different features that the hardware has, say interrupt controllers, MMUs, and things like that. And that supervisor layer, in customer measurement, it comes out that the cost, the actual runtime performance cost of that supervisor layer is in the tenths of a percent, say 0.3%, depending on what type of algorithms you run there. On top of that, that virtualization layer can also help you to actually run multiple different operating systems on top of a core. And that's what you see in the upper right-hand scenario. So now I have two operating systems running on top of my virtualization layer, on top of my hypervisor, on top of my processor. Combine all this, and you can see that you can actually take your 8-core processor, and it can run, for example, let's say a 2-core Linux SMP on the first 2 cores, and it can run AMP, supervised AMP operating systems on the rest of the 2 cores. And I can really easily adjust my virtualization layer to establish whatever configuration I want on top of that powerful multi-core chip. So that's one of the reasons that Wind River combines multi-core, which provides true raw performance, with virtualization, which allows you the capability to harness that that performance. So to actually harness that performance, you need a number of different things. You need different operating systems. Linux, as we all know, is very good at networking. Is very good in open source. But in cases where you need true deterministic, close to hard real-time support, Linux often has a hard time catching up to it. And that's where you need a real-time operating system such as VxWorks. And you can take those operating systems and together with a virtualization layer, configure them whichever way you want. But when you build these systems, you also need to communicate. You need communication between these different virtual machines in your system. So you need inter-core communication. You need your scalable virtualization support. And you need something that's very interesting, and I'll touch back on that in a little bit. It's called multi-core enabled networking. And I'll promise you to get back to that in a slide or two. So just think about why people are going to multi-core and virtualization. And then for many people in the ATCA world, it's pure performance. They want the additional performance that the multi-core chips have. So they go either from a single core to a multi-core chip, or they actually go from an existing multi-core chip, let's say 4 dual-core 8572s, to a single P4080. So from a multi-core to multi-multi-core, or many-core if you wish, whichever term you prefer. But another very important driver for this multi-core to virtualization and virtualization drive is what we call consolidation. Many people have multiple different blades doing multiple different things. So instead of having these multiple different blades sucking up a whole bunch of power, I can actually combine all these different functions on a single multi-core chip. So I can take, again, these 4 8572s. Maybe they're doing the same thing, maybe they're doing different things, but I can actually combine them on a single processor and use that virtualization layer to truly partition that software, that piece of hardware up, and almost treat it like it had 4 separate processors, except, of course, with a smaller power consumption envelope. So the question then is, how can you benefit from this multi-core? Where do you go? We've seen a very interesting set of blades from Continuous. In the first presentation, you have a dual Nehalem setup. You have 8 cores. You can expect in the next few years that that's going to go up to 12, 16, 32, and higher cores. Where do you go? how do you make use of this processing power? And the question here is, it depends where you come from. So if you're doing new development, basically the world is your oyster. You have many different options. So if you're planning to develop an 8-core platform, maybe you have different carriers, maybe you have some control, and here is an interesting way to divide that 8-core platform up. So I've put a Linux SMP in the first two cores, and then VxWorks SAMP, so basically each virtual machine has its own core, on the rest of the cores. Linux handles the control, VxWorks handles the networking, and you have a very nice configurable platform. If you go to a 16-core model later, you can then choose whether you want to go give Linux 4-cores SMP, and maybe each VxWorks instance to dual cores, or maybe you want to run multiple different VxWorks instances. It all depends on the type of software configuration you have on top of there. So virtualization truly provides you the flexibility here. The other solution, the other approach that you may have is an existing project. And I mentioned this slightly already. If you have an 8572, let's say a four core duos, and you want to go to this Nehalem configuration, that migration is easy. It's almost trivial. You take your existing operating system from one core or from one processor, and you plop it into a partition on top of your new processor. The supervisor tries to establish the exact same environment, and poof, off you go to the races. So virtualization can truly help you there. And then just to give you a third use case, and I promise to get back to the network offloading. To truly use multicore, we need to find out how to best parallelize the application. And many people currently have, if they do some form of say, radio base station or RNC type of solution, they have pillars. What if you can take this pillar apart and have a small control section, but offload different packet inspections and packet forwarding to specialized cores? That's exactly what you can do as well in some of these advanced processors. And again, P4080, Nehalem, go to Cavium, RMI, these processes are really good in giving a particular core one particular function and then try to forward as much packets to these cores as you can. That way you get best parallelism in your design. So, of course, you can take the use case too, where it was talking about moving from an existing design to a multi-core, and you can then optimize that in a second step later. All right, let me just round up here and say lots of information, very little amount of time. Wind River is a very good partner to work with here. Wind River has the runtimes, the operating systems, the virtualization layers. We have the tools, which I kind of ignored in this talk, but the tools that are really important to build and debug these systems as well, and of course the people to help you with that. Future-proof and optimize for the different pieces of silicon. So multi-core and virtualization, it's important. It's really truly creating an inflection point in the industry. It's going to be very important to ride that inflection point and kick your solutions into the next gear. There's no single silver bullet solution. You'll need breadth and flexibility. And I wish you all success in trying to ride that wave. So with that, let me give it back to you, Joe.
Okay, thanks, Mark. We're running a little late, but our last presenter, Jeff Marden, is extremely experienced in the advanced TCA field and has contributed a lot to the advanced TCA specification process. So I'd like to quickly hand it over to Jeff, and when we're done, we will go into the Q&A session. Jeff?
Thank you, Joe. This is Jeff Marden. I'm an architect and technologist in the communications group of GE FANUC Intelligent Platforms. I'm going to talk a little bit about multi-core and ATCA together, provide some applications, and talk a little bit about how you might solve some of those applications with multi-core technology. I'd like you to consider for just a few moments the latest technology telecom processing applications today. One of those might be the next generation network. Now, this next generation network stack shown in this diagram presents a look at that technology, and we'll try and tie a little bit of that together. The next generation network is a packet network able to provide telecommunications services and make use of multiple transport technologies. Generally, in these networks, you facilitate the conversions of voice data and video network into a single unified packet-based multi-service network. And to do that, this network stack has four layers. Working from the bottom up, the access layer is typically the clients in a network. Transport layer has the connectivity for all of the components physically separated in the network. Transporting up to the control layer, which is where the actual switching technology occurs in this network and connection setup and control, and then facilitating upwards in IP packets towards the service layer where the applications that are going to run on top of this network are operated. So thinking a little bit about that, consider where the processing nodes are and what kind of processing work needs to be done. There are two fields here, one in the transport layer and one in the control layer, where multi-core technology and where ATCA systems can and have been implemented to achieve solutions in this world. The multimedia gateway controller is a switch technology located in the service provider's network and handles call controls and connection maintenance and call state for every call in the network. It interacts with the transport layer and also with the service layer to operate properly. Below that, in the transport layer, the concept of interface to other networks is brought to bear, and two nodes there, session border controller is an administrative boundary on an IP network enforcing policy on multimedia sessions between networks, and it can be split into a number of logical functions, including interworking and security firewall work and network address translation and other operations associated with connection to an associated network. On the other side of the transport layer, there's a security gateway, and that gateway is primarily acting as an encryption-decryption firewall between a completely external network, symbolized by the Internet here, and the internal network in the transport layer. A second application to think about is LTE, and in some of the earlier presentations, some of the logistics of long-term evolution have been covered, but I wanted to show you a diagram of this and talk a little bit about the functional blocks here and how they might apply in the topic we're trying to cover. This is a system by which voice and data is manipulated and moved through a communications network using both the these two blocks highlighted here, the mobility management engine and the system application evolution engine. And these have been broken up into control plane and data plane functions connecting both the users down by the eNode B base stations and the resource and the external network. So trying to apply some tie together here. The MME is a control plane function and is handling connections up and down in that role with the SAE gateway providing the data plane functions and connecting up to an external network. And so thinking a little bit about how you now apply some of the multi-core technology to this, you want to think a little bit about a control plane solution, and I'll present for your consideration an ATCA-based multi-core single board computer. This one happens to be a GE Fanuc A10200, which is a dual nihalum ATCA blade. And in this dual nihalum blade, looking at the block diagram a minute, the point to highlight is in the middle towards the top, which are the two dual Intel nihalum processors. These are 2- and 4-core versions of the processor in each with associated memory and a chipset providing the I.O. functionality both to the user in the form of the panels, some internal connectivity, and to the ATCA backplane. Annotating this diagram then to show some of the functionality, you'll see under the heat sinks there a pair of multi-core processors. These are the Intel Nehalem 5500 CPUs, and again they can be the 5508 for dual core or the 5518 and up for the quad core implementation. There is DDR3 memory supporting each of those CPUs and a chipset connecting those CPUs and their optimized compute environment to the rest of the system. And then, of course, there is connectivity to the ATCA backplane to allow this CPU node to connect into a system. Thinking about the data plane then, we'll take a look at a second processing node. This is an ATCA multi-core packet processor, and it is based on the Cavium Networks Octeon Plus packet processing technology. And so having a look at that a second, again in a block diagram, in the middle of the diagram there are two packet processors tied together and connected for connectivity to both the ATCA backplane and the line interface. And these multi-core processors are operating either with individual cores performing specific functions or symmetrically with a group of cores together to provide some compute horsepower. Annotating this diagram a little bit then, the two multi-core processors are shown, again, under heat sinks, and there is packet memory associated with each of those processors providing the buffering and the intermediate storage for packets that are moving this through this data plane system. And then, of course, as in the other board, connectivity to the ATCA backplane with the goal of providing this node in the network and bringing external connectivity through the data plane to the ATCA backplane. Tying it together then, I'd like to think a little bit about the multi-core-based ATCA platform. And in this platform, among the rest of the ATCA infrastructure that is part of the system that you're putting together, there are arrays of processing nodes implementing multi-core technology. In this example, there are four CPUs using the Nehalem architecture, providing some of that control work and general purpose processing, and then a packet processing node providing the data plane operation, along with a fully redundant implementation which provides some of the reliability that's important in this world. So that's just a quick overview, hopefully tying together some of the aspects that we've heard in this presentation around hardware and software to provide multi-core technology and its application in an ATCA world. And that completes my presentation. Joe, back to you.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. We're running a little long today, but we'd like to spend a little time doing some Q&A. Again, we encourage you to, you've got the experts on the panel here today, encourage you to ask questions. There's a little button on the lower left side of your screen that allows you to post a question, and we'll just go ahead and try to get through that. A little bit of housekeeping on the Q&A session. Just see if you'd push the next slide, please. Okay, this event will be archived later today and be available for about a year at the URL you see right there. And if you have any questions for us or what can tell us ways to make these ECAS better in the future, please email Christy at the address that you see. So let's just dive in. Here's a question for you, Jeff. Is there interest in multi-core and ATCA outside of telecom?
Well, I would say, Joe, that the interest in multi-core could be universal. Multi-core technology brings high compute capability to any application, and so there's no reason not to consider multi-core technology generally as it applied to most tasks. As it sits in an ATCA platform, that platform becomes very capable and certainly applicable to a variety of applications.
Anyone else care to comment on ATCA outside of telecom? Okay, here's a question I'll just throw out to the group, see who wants to answer it. When designing an ATCA multi-core system, what surrounding infrastructure is of key importance?
Yeah, this is Jason here with Continuous. I think I'd like to chime in here.
Okay.
It's a good question, and I think the answer really is in a couple of parts. First thing is memory. Clearly applications are becoming more and more memory intensive, especially around the use of multi-core when it's now becoming prevalent. More is better certainly is the approach. On the x86 front, for example, with Intel embedding that memory controller in the Nehalem chip, latency is down but usage is up. So the first thing to do is certainly maximize your the amount of memory you can squeeze onto that board, and certainly 8 DIMMs seems to be ringing true with the market right now. I think, secondly, maybe the second thing I'd like to highlight is storage. Certainly this is true around the x86 multi-core environments. applications like video streaming are certainly storage hungry, where latency in accessing the data is to be kept to a minimum, and again, more is better. Lastly, I think, Joe, would be I.O., the I.O. that you feed to these multi-core machines, as I like to call them. The processors are clearly increasing capacity in leaps and bounds, but this is useless if you can't get the I.O. to feed them. So having I.O. in the front and rear panel, enabling really low-profile applications, as well as having large capacity systems, you know, front-ending with large capacity, low-latency switches. Especially in the marketplace today where there's 160 gigabit per switch per second uplink capacity with some of the switching capacities that we have at Continuous. And I think, well, lastly, we've really covered, our folks have covered previously on this call, was software, which I think our friends have really clearly highlighted. I think that's it, Joe.
Well, here's a related question that came in. Is ATC-8, with all these improvements in processing power and I.O. bandwidth, is the ATC-8 backplane capacity quickly becoming a bottleneck?
Yeah, very good question. Certainly, the 10 gigabits per second system or per blade is certainly something that is now prevalent in the market. It started off at 1 gig. We're now at 10 gig systems. The hype certainly is around the 40 gig systems, and they're coming to market, I think, early part of next year. So the backplane certainly is, with the multi-core technology, both in the x86 and the packet processors, really increasing exponentially, the backplane is certainly becoming part of the bottleneck. I wouldn't say it's the only bottleneck, but certainly part of it. And the jump from 10 to 40 gig is certainly going to help that, alleviate that in the short term. But again, after that will be 100 gig, and there'll be, you know, continual churn of investment.
Yeah, I will add that PCMIG is working very, very hard right now on quadrupling the capacity of the 3.1 spec, which is Ethernet over the backplane, from 10 gigabits per pair, which means 40 gigabits per lane, so an aggregate bandwidth increase of 4x. And we expect to have that spec out sometime next year, about the time silicon will be available. But Mark, here's one for you. What tools for virtualization are there for x86 and Octeon-based processors? Are they both for Linux and VxWorks? And is Octeon VxWorks?
Yeah, absolutely. Both these processors are really very important from Wind River's perspective. So talking about tools for these two processors, there's the virtualization layer itself. Wind River has a product called Wind River Hypervisor that allows you to indeed run Linux and VxWorks on top of these two cores. And there's some, if you search some press releases that Wind River has done with regards to support for Cavium, and certainly our support for Intel is second to none. And then, of course, the tools to build on top of that, sorry to interrupt there, the debugging and developing on top of that is an important part as well. And Wind River has the workbench environment for that.
Sorry, Mark, I'm trying to go through these questions fast.
Absolutely.
Got a bunch. Here's an alphabet soup question. I'll just throw it out to the group. I'm not sure who's the best one to answer it. Please comment on any L3 router designs using XTCA, BGP, ISIS, IPv6, quality service, PIMSM, et cetera.
These are generally, Joe, these are layer 3 routing protocols, and both switches today have in mind layer 2 and layer 3 routing, and so depending on the implementation from each vendor, you're going to see most of those issues covered as a part of that switch's attempt to provide layer 3 functionality.
Okay, thank you. Here's another question for the group. Is 10 gig emerging as a backplane fat pipe protocol in favor of PCIe? I assume the questioner is meaning 10 gig Ethernet.
This is Jeff Martin. I would say yes, Joe.
The answer is yes.
In the telecommunications world, Ethernet is the predominant backplane transport, and 10 gig is the where we're at today, with 40 gig going forward.
That's correct. Here's kind of a general question for the group. What are your views on power and cooling budget with the increasing capacity that's forecasted in bandwidth? How's this going to affect power and cooling? I guess I'll weigh in here. What we've seen in the silicon projection so far is there will not be a significant increase in power required to run 40 gig. Cooling is always an issue in ATCA, and we do have a group working on sort of extending ACA power budgets for applications outside of telecom, known as ATCA extensions. We're actually hoping to get to 800 watts per cooling are always an issue. I don't know if anyone else has a comment.
I guess, Joe, from a GE Fanuc perspective, I agree. Each ATCA system implementation requires a very straightforward and detailed analysis of power and cooling in order to achieve the applications. And as the platforms increase in performance, there's liable to be additional consideration required.
Here's a related question. I guess people are interested in the subject. Is 40 gig in demand now? And I guess I would say it's, you know, you can never be too thin, too rich, or have too much bandwidth. And the answer is clearly yes. And applications like IPTV are driving that. I don't know what the group has further comments. I believe it is in demand.
Joe, I would say that 40 gig technology, as you say, bandwidth is always of interest. I think a lot of folks are spending some time thinking about how they can use 10 gig effectively, so at least the initial concept of 40 gig needs some additional thought on their part. But in general, as time goes on, people will begin to consume that bandwidth and need more.
Yeah, this is Phil from Mercury. We certainly see, you know, with the advent of the horsepower of multi-core processors, they really need a fat pipe or a fatter pipe to keep them busy.
Here's a question for Jason specifically, and is the XC60 available now, and if not, when?
Good question. Yes, it is, and certainly you can request an eval on our website. I'm with the higher power SKUs as well, not just the standard ATCA that you'll find in other products.
We still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry for there's some static on the line. So yes, it's available. You can get eval requests on our website, and that's not just with the standard ATCA, but with that bridging the divide with these higher power CPU SKUs.
So here's a general question for the group: is it difficult to efficiently multi-core enable an existing application? How do you do that?
I'm willing to get a first kick at the can here. This is Mark. I don't think you can actually provide a surefire solution, right? That was my comment. There's no silver bullet here. If it's a very parallel application with lots of threads, then definitely an SMP design, a single operating system SMP over multiple cores would work well. But there's a whole bunch of things to consider here, memory consumption, bus bandwidth, and things like that. If your existing application, it really is multiple different nodes, then having a virtualization layer and putting these different nodes on a single multi-core chip would work fairly well. And any other comments?
Anybody else? Here's sort of a related question. What's the most significant advantage of using multi-core processors in telecom applications? Jeff, would you care to comment on that?
Well, I guess I would say, Joe, that the ability to either combine cores to create significant horsepower increase or to combine applications into multiple cores kind of fits that bill. The technology has evolved nicely, and each of the vendors who offers technology in that area seems to have taken advantage of that functionality in their own way. I talked a little bit about the Intel Nehalem and the Cavium Octeon. Each of those guys have a specific implementation to provide their functionality and their capability and what they've added around the cores in order to provide a total solution.
Okay, thanks. Here's probably a question for you, Jeff, or Jason. Do you have sort of any power dissipation comparisons for packet processing boards versus x86 boards?
Yeah, this is Jason here. Certainly when you look at the life of the packet processors and compare to the, like we've talked about here, the Nehalems, you'll find, I think, that the packet processors are coming in with less power than some of the standard ATCA SKU. Clearly, some of the, when you go above that ATCA and right up to the high-performance data center in the Nehalems, they're running at 95 watts. You know, the packet processors aren't coming close to that. So it's really what's pushing the envelope for power and cooling really is the x86 we're finding, not really the packet processing side.
Okay. Joe, I'd agree with Jason on that. It looks like there's a line between the two of them.
Mark, or maybe Phil, this one is for you guys. How's the performance of virtualization impacted when the core count gets really high, like above 64?
I'm happy to pick up a kick at that. What we've seen so far is that the trick here is to make sure that you develop your applications in such a way that all the cores can do significant work independently. And that's, again, where if you have a good virtualization layer that provides that, that separation and the virtualization layer itself doesn't become your bottleneck, of course, then that scalability becomes really, really good.
Yeah, this is Phil. Obviously, it does depend on the application, but as Mark says, if you have a good compute to I/O ratio, if you like, that somehow matches the type of hardware you're targeting, then you stand to gain very, very high factors of using the multiple cores to do that application.
Okay, we've got one last question, and I think we'll wrap this up. And this is more of a business question, I think. Does multi-core technology move the lines regarding general-purpose processor use versus, say, packet processor use, given development cycles and technology costs and workforce skill sets and things like that? What are the implications there?
This is Phil. Personally, I see that it's always difficult to pick your implementation. I mean, technology is changing a lot. In particular, the general purpose core counts are rapidly increasing. But it is often sort of a business decision as to whether you go for a mixture of special purpose accelerators, which have their own advantages, or try and stick with the mainstream.
Okay. Well, we've run well past our allotted time. I want to thank the attendees for staying on the line past our hour goal, and I see most of you did, and I want to thank you for that. I also want to thank the presenters for the time they took to develop these presentations and be here today to present this information. There was a lot of information on this ECAST today. There's a little survey question here at the end. If you could answer that, that's helpful. But the URL that you can see for Christy, if you could go back to the slide with the ECAST URL. Thank you. This event will be archived later today, and you should be able to see it for about a year for those of you that weren't able to stick for the whole hour. So, again, those of you who have attended this ECAST, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to attend it. And for the presenters, I want to thank you for taking the time to develop these presentations. And I want to thank Christy and the staff at Open Systems Media for putting all this together. So that will sign off. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.